So when you talk about getting dressed for success, we can't predefine what success looks like for brands anymore. It has to be in collab with consumers.
Hey, I'm Mike Stopforth, and this is The One-Eyed Man, a show where I talk to talented people doing meaningful work at the intersections of leadership, technology, and impact. Thanks again to those of you who are return listeners. You are extremely faithful. And if you're here for the first time, a big welcome. My guest on this week's show is Nicola Van Ast. Nicola is the CMO of Melon Mobile and, full disclosure, my wife Anna's business partner in GrowThink, a results-led performance marketing agency geared towards organizations who find themselves in their challenging startup and scale-up phase. In this episode, we talk about Melon Mobile's recent, quite bold and cheeky campaign, billboard campaign, where they hijacked several other brands' billboards with their What in the Melon message. We also talk about the challenge of being a disruptor like Melon in such a deeply established and competitive industry, and talk about how GrowThink is helping other startups and interesting scale-ups think differently about their brand building challenges. I hope you enjoy the conversation. So, Nicola, thanks a stack for taking time out of your very busy schedule to talk about this really exciting client, this really exciting brand, this innovative business that is ruffling a few feathers in the telco world, and specifically this campaign that's garnered a lot of attention. And I wondered if maybe we could start there. This is a campaign that I think is almost entirely unique for a South African audience. We've not really seen anything like this before. And I'd love to hear a little bit more about the genesis of the idea and how it all started and what you learned rolling out what I can only imagine must have been a logistical challenge from start to finish. So yeah, tell me about your genius.
Brilliant. Thank you, Mike. And thanks for having me. The genius, I certainly can't claim it as my own. I am very grateful to be part of the Melon journey because it has been incredibly fascinating. But in terms of where the genius began, it really starts with why I was initially attracted to Melon. And that is because of the nature of the disruption to the category. And the nature of the disruption to the category is one that is meaningful to the end user. I think, you know, disruption has been a word that is being overused and not given enough meaning in a lot of instances for the very people for whom the disruption was supposedly intended, you know, the end user, the customer at the end of the day. So I was very attracted to Melon precisely because they were wanting to disrupt a category, a 30-year-old category, for the end user to solve for the customer. And their premises was always, what are we solving, not what are we selling? And that attracted me hugely as an individual to want to be a part and to see where I could add value into that journey. And where this campaign came from is part of that DNA of the Melon business, the Melon brand, the Melon culture, that DNA of what are we solving? And the reality was that who better to answer that than the end user? And so this was an open invitation to South Africa to go give Melon a try. You know, we're the first telecommunications provider to offer a free trial on the continent in a typical subscription model where we're really asking South Africans to try us before you buy us, so to speak. And it's not a phrase I love, but, you know, it's try us before you test us. I think so many brands can run the risk of becoming complacent, especially in industries that have legacy, you know, that are decades in. And there can be a complacency that creeps in where you forget asking the customer to model the solutions that work for them. And I think that's exactly what makes this campaign exciting. It's not because it's a brilliant campaign, and I really do take my hat off to the creative team inside Mellon who came up with it, because it is a brilliant campaign. And it's a disruptive campaign, not just because the message is disruptive, but because the product is. And that's why I think it's working so well.
I love that phrase that you used, not what are we selling, what are we solving? And I think you make such a valid observation that it's really easy to forget in, you know, in established industries, in saturated industries where you find yourself essentially in a race to the bottom. It's so easy to forget what problem you're actually solving. Obviously, the quintessential example there is like the Airbnb example, right? Like hotels become about property occupancy rather than getting somebody a safe and affordable place to sleep for the night, right? What problem is it that you're actually solving, and how quickly an industry that is seems too big to fail, seems too big to be disrupted, can be unseated when somebody approaches it from a fresh angle, right? So Mellon is not brand new. Mellon has been around a little while. Mm-hmm. And many of us, I think, would have experienced the brand through word of mouth. And so this was a big step up in visibility and in a sort of a bold statement. And as you said, one of the unique characteristics of Mellon's approach to this quite well-established customer base is try before you buy, or, you know, a free trial. But in what other ways is Mellon like drastically different from the experience I would have with the more established telcos in South Africa?
It's a really good question, Mike. And I think it goes to the premise of why Mellon was founded. Essentially, you know, there is an experience back to that phrase, you know, what are we solving versus what are we selling? Now, what are we solving is a need for connection, is a need to be connected, to have uninterrupted connection for your professional life, for your personal life.
Imagine that.
And on your terms. And I think that's the really important part. You know, we've been stuck in an ecosystem, not of our creation, that is now 30 years old, that doesn't work for the consumer of today. I might not necessarily want to go into a physical environment. I personally, as do many people, prefer the concept of self-service in a digitally native environment. The other side of that coin is I also want to engage with a human being when I am struggling with something. Sure. And those are two of the very big, I think, points of differentiation to some of the norms in the industry, that it's a digitally native business. It's completely self-service, in that you can set up an account, self-recur, choose a plan, or build your own plan. You're not dictated to by a menu item of what's
prescribed
available.
You structure,
can build, you know, what you want. I'm that person that makes my own meal in a restaurant. I'm that awful person. But most people want to have that option. And so that is what you're able to do in the Mellon app, and it's incredibly easy, and you can port your existing number and all of that on your own. In 3 minutes, I did it in 3 minutes. And you can immediately chat to a human person to talk you through something if you are unsure about anything. And that is also incredibly important, because what's beautiful about that, Mike, is that is an ongoing filter of new innovation. And what I mean by that is, as much as certainly there is a place for automation and AI, and it is a necessary lever with scale in any business, but it cannot be at the behest of interaction, because human interaction with your customers is where you continue to learn what you need to be solving. Otherwise, you will get into that cycle of selling and no longer solving. And in interacting with customers, we're ongoing. And I mean, Maddie, our head of customer service, and Emma and the whole team, there is this amazing team of humans who are genuinely hand-holding where necessary, or equipping where necessary, people to sign up to Mellon, whether it's Mellon Business or Mellon Consumer. And in that process, they're learning. Okay, that's interesting. So you were worried about porting for these reasons. Okay, how can we help you solve that? So now we're instituting a that almost a new service where we're helping people to port, where we're taking that admin away from them if they're currently in a contract. So it is through that constant engagement that we are in an ongoing learning cycle of how to solve for the customer in this industry.
So interesting, you're talking about that flipping of the model, the different roles that automation and convenience versus human interaction and compassion can play in the value chain. The experience for many of us has been quite the opposite, right? So I tend to do an annual visit to my telco, one of the stores, the closest one in the mall near me or whatever, and I do that because I know I'll be able to sit with a person who can help me work through the quite obvious and intentional obfuscation in the product suite and whatever. And I suddenly find out, oh, actually, I can do this much cheaper. And if I do a SIM-only thing over here and I buy the phone over here. And so I'll sit with, and I've been often very surprised at how helpful those people are with, kind of getting me past the mystery, because after all, where there's lots of mystery, there's margin. And that's been super helpful. But then, as you say, like, I've got an issue because I need to change the address related to the business account that I bill this particular number through, and all of a sudden it becomes an absolute admin nightmare, and there's nobody meaningful or helpful that can assist me on that side of the equation. And flipping it around, where you go, the product is so customizable, it's so intuitive that I don't need a person to help me select my experience, but the person will help me when I come unstuck down the line. I think it's a really great way of thinking about the right place to put each of those, the very best of data science and the very best of domain expertise together, right? I mean, I'd love to hear about the campaign itself, because it really was a like a quite in your face hijacking of other brands that many of us are familiar with and love. And it's not often you see a brand deliberately jumping on another brand's billboard or another brand's. I mean, we've seen competitive advertising. We've seen quite smart and snarky interplay between brands online. But this was it, like, we're going to literally invade your billboard with our own stuff. How did that idea come about? And talk me through how you had to navigate some of the conversations with the other brands, because I assume that there was quite a lot of partnership that led to the ability to do that rather than pure pure hijacking.
You've used a word, competitive advertising. So the intention here was actually exactly the opposite. It's complementary advertising in that we were very, very intentional about the brands that we targeted to take over their boards, in that they were South African brands that we had deep love and respect for what they were solving for what they stood for their values. And we want to see South African brands succeeding. And the ability to do that is to answer the needs of the consumer today, and to always put under the microscope what that consumer needs and what the best way is to provide that in a way that is simple, to your point, that a way that doesn't require simplification down the line because you're confused about the product you're in. So we were very intentional with this campaign in terms of those brands, those personalities that we very intentionally took over. But that takeover was a call out to them, from one South African brand to another, from one South African business to another, from one South African person to another, going, would you give us a try? We're asking every South African to put melon to the test because we know we built something fundamentally from the bottom up, from a mobile tech perspective, from a customer service perspective, that we know is great. But we're not going to put that on a billboard because every other telco puts that on a billboard with the expectation that you have to take it at face value. And that's just not good enough anymore. So if we're going to say we've really built something different and disruptive, we're going to ask you to test us. And so what better way to get the attention of the nation than to ask some of its heroes to give us a try and some of its well-loved brands to give us a go as well. And I think what's been the most incredibly rewarding part of this journey for me, Mike, has been the response of those brands and of those personalities. You know, the extent to which Lyft has got on board, Buff has got on board, and there are absolutely partnerships emerging out of this now. And I can't say too much yet, but in the next couple of months, there are some very, very exciting things coming out of those collaborations where South African brands work together to deliver not just value for the customer, but fun as well. You know, some brands lose sight of that.
That's awesome. That's really, really cool. I'm excited to see that unfold. So, Nix, you wear two hats. You play a role as a custodian for Melon's brand voice and ambitions in the market, and you've done amazing work there. But you also play a role in GrowThink. And I'd love to talk a little bit about what GrowThink does and why you're excited about – because I guess in many ways GrowThink is a mini Melon in that you are also disrupting. You are also approaching a quite competitive and established space with a very fresh lens. And so they mirror each other's intentions in many ways. Talk to me about GrowThink and why you're excited about the future of that business as well.
Thank you, Mike. You're absolutely right. And the partnership of GrowThink and Melon is one of shared interest and passion to be at the intersection of what customers need and what brands are able to deliver in a sustainable and meaningful way that means that it will have a relevant contribution to the South African economy. That is a very long-winded way of saying I and GrowThink, myself and my business partner, are deeply passionate about building sustainable business practices, specifically on home soil in South Africa. We want to be part of changing for the good the mortality rate of businesses and the success rate and sustainability of businesses. And that is really why we founded GrowThink. It's why Melon is such a natural partner for us. We have been at that intersection of the innovation and the disruption of industry, creating more sustainable business practices, whether it be in streaming with Showmax, whether it be in fintech with the likes of Ikoka, and now in telecommunications with Melon. And it's just an area where we love to play and where we love to be able to be part of the value equation of going, what can we do differently here? Let's put this under the microscope and understand how to answer what the consumer needs and not what the business needs as the first step of growth. And that's really what we do, and it's why this partnership works. And it is incredible to work with brands like Melon who have the trust, the absolute trust in the partnership, because the passion and the intention is shared.
Mm. But I suppose there are lots of businesses that can do some of what you've spoken about. There's businesses that can do market research, I guess, to understand what the customer wants. There's businesses that will sift through terabytes and terabytes of data to try and garner insights that will help brands make better decisions about how they communicate. There's agencies that help with brand positioning. What is the GrowThink secret sauce? What are you doing differently? What is the ideal brief for you guys as a consortium of digital experts?
It's a great question, Mike, and it's got a really easy answer. We are a very small team that is governed by measurable results. that is why we exist. I think there is a place for every single one of the players, the format of the players that you've mentioned, the bigger players, the big companies, the big agencies, the big market research companies. We are at the intersection of a lot of those companies. And what I mean by that is we're deep growth professionals taking the data that is available, and when it's not available, making sure we get our hands on it to understand what growth levers to pull when in order to affect a result and a return. And some of those will be levers that are quick wins, and some of those will be levers that require investment for long tail growth. That is exactly what we do. And unfortunately, there are too many entities that stop at that intersection, that hand over the keys, so to speak, to the kingdom. And then an execution, the intention, unfortunately, is not realized. And that is where most growth gets lost, is that there are phenomenal intention. There's phenomenal strategies out there.
Sure.
And it's in execution. This campaign, this Melon campaign, was not an easy one to execute, let me put it that way.
Sure.
You know, you're taking over billboards, you're navigating a very intentional and specific message that you're asking South Africans to participate in. That in execution, we could have won or lost. And I think where Growth Inc. is so passionate is about not only understanding what levers to pull when, but being a part of your scrum team that executes on that and holds themselves accountable to that execution.
Okay, that's super helpful. Because I think, I suppose for audience members who are uninitiated in the marketing ecosystem, it's easy for us to talk about the places that we specialize, whether it's the business that I'm involved in, or I guess any agency purports to be different and special, but navigating through exactly how we're different and special can be quite difficult to do. I find that sometimes it's easier to describe what we do by talking about what we won't do. So what is it that Growth Think won't do? What do you not get involved in? Where do you prefer not to? What conversations do you prefer to stay out of?
So, Mike, that's a really interesting and lovely way to actually look at it. We won't get involved with when you need a big agency running a big account, you know, with multiple divisions and a lot of maintenance work. You know, we get involved, our sweet spot where we want to play and where we have the most impact is startup to scale up. It's where we play a lot, and it's where we have a huge amount of impact.
Yeah.
And so we are not well suited to the large corporations that require big agencies. We are a small senior team, and we intend to keep it that way. We have a very disruptive model in that we don't have a lot of overheads very intentionally, because we have no desire to ever hand those overheads over to our clients. So we're a very small team, senior experts that get very, very stuck in, and that works. It works for us, and we intend to keep it that way.
Cool. So that experience that you've gathered working with startups and scale-ups across the continent, but predominantly in Southern Africa, from a branding and communication perspective, this doesn't always seem to be the most receptive market to new entrants. We tend to be quite skeptical of new entrants. So certainly that's my reading of the situation. How do you think about the branding and marketing challenge through the lens of kind of the general startup or scale up? If I was pitching to you that I am starting a rideshare competitor and I'm launching that within the next 3 months, and I need your perspective on how to maximize the bang for my obviously very limited founder buck, what is your starting advice to those very ambitious, but often, you know, quite commercially oriented and not necessarily marketing oriented startups?
So Mike, I always start these types of conversations with that same question. What are you solving?
Mm-hmm.
And if there is a very deep and keen understanding of what are you solving, and there is enough of an audience that is looking for that solution, then there's room to play if you are answering it in a way that is meaningful for that audience. So whilst we are not receptive in many instances to new brands, and that is a situation that I think will always be true, especially as economies become tighter. You know, we don't hand out trust easily as consumers, and nor should we. So it's about your first step in as a brand, especially as a new entrant, is to answer a need and to answer it authentically, and then build trust from there. And there is a reason why Melon didn't go out and paint billboards from day one. And you rightfully mentioned that they are not on day one. You know, they're in year two, because they took the time to really ensure that they were solving the right problems and were in a place where scale was possible because your foundations were right. So my advice would always be, if you are a new entrant, it is hard. You have a long and sometimes frustrating, because brand building is not an overnight job, and it is a long tail investment. And there is always an academic appreciation of that in the beginning. But when you're 3 months in, and you know, it's like, why aren't the figures more? And the board is getting nervous, and because we forget that it's a long tail investment. So I would say my advice would be, you have to invest in brand. You have to keep reminding yourself that it won't happen overnight. But as an interim, or not as an interim, in parallel with that, you have to be looking at, what am I solving for, and how do I show up in answering that in the spaces where it is relevant to the person looking for those answers. You know, a very typical answer to that is in the search space. I think there is so much opportunity in search for people to show up in authentic and relevant ways. And I think some brands are doing it incredibly well via their content. And I think other brands are leaving a lot of money on the table in terms of showing up against what people are looking for.
There's potentially a creative tension there from a brand building perspective. And I keep stumbling across this sort of two broad schools of thought. And I know that you and I instinctively err on backing the same one, but the reality is that there is another one. So let me try and explain. There is the don't write checks you can't cash brand building exercise, where you're talking about building the foundations, building a great product. Branding is a creative expression of the truth. It is a wonderful way of telling people about where you are already capable and competent, and then doubling down on that. The other one is dress for the job you want, right? It's the brand is not necessarily a creative expression of reality. It's a North Star. It's a vision. It's an aspirational statement, not just for the client, the customer, the potential customer, but actually for the business itself, where we might not be there right now, but that's what we want to be. And I think I actually have become less critical of the second approach in my advanced age, because I think it has a place in certain sectors and certain contexts. And I think I see that playing out quite often in the Silicon Valley type mindset of business building and scaling. But I'm interested in hearing your thoughts on the, you know, in what world does it work for a brand, and maybe specifically a South African business, to do the dress for the job you want and then figure it out as you go approach, as opposed to the one that you and I tend to default to, which is, you know, narrow the gap between what you are promising and what you are delivering.
So, Mike, it's such an important topic and it needs to be its own podcast because there's depth here that needs to be explored. But what I will say is that I absolutely don't think it's one or the other. I definitely, as someone who, you know, started my profession in brand valuation, always erred towards the side of a brand being, certainly a valuable brand being a promise well kept. So absolutely in the old school creative expression of truth. However, to your point, you know, I won't say how many years ago that start of my career was, but the reality is a lot has changed since then in the way that consumers engage with brands and their expectations of them. And their expectations are no longer, I demand and you need to deliver. You made me a promise and you have to keep it. Their expectations are, you said you would do this, you're solving for this. You are. However, have you thought about solving for it this way? Or I don't love having to go to a physical environment. Do you have a self-service option? Consumers want to participate in what good looks like now. So when you talk about getting dressed for success, we can't predefine what success looks like for brands anymore. It has to be in collab with consumers. So I don't think it's a case of one or the other. I think it's a case of natural evolution of one to another. And I think it is about participation with consumers now, and agility has to be at the heart of what you do. Or unfortunately, I don't think there's going to be much room for you in the playground of the future.
Yeah, the reason I brought it up is that it's a topic that my previous guest, Dean Olshig, and I unpacked a little bit, but not quite at the same level of depth. And maybe I didn't even identify at that stage how I felt like there was this kind of tension between these two approaches. But I think Dean is very much of a brand is an aspirational statement. It is a North Star. It needs to move you towards something else. Whereas I tend to be more of the, and I suppose some of it is maybe about time frame as well. It also depends on what you want to achieve and in what time frame as to which of those strategies is going to be more suitable. But I think you're spot on that maybe I'm creating a false dichotomy here. Maybe this is more both and rather than either or. So Nick, just in wrapping up, I imagine there might be some people that are listening to our conversation and are interested in Melon and in testing Melon's capability, but are nervous about, you know, maybe I've had 20 years worth of contractual relationship with my existing service provider. And I'm, you know, it's almost like a devil you know versus devil you don't kind of cautionary feeling. What would you say to people that want to experiment but are a little nervous about the implications of doing so?
I think we've removed a lot of the barriers to being able to test. So it's the exact reason why we launched the free trial, Mike, to be honest. So you have a 14-day window, much like you would with a Netflix or a Showmax, to test it. You know, there are basically a few things that people are rightfully and should be testing and are nervous about. Am I going to have the same coverage that I do today? So Melon is on the MTN network, which is the best in the country. And that is important to note. Infrastructurally, they're a really important part of this industry. Two, they are worried about, am I able to port my number? Is that going to be easy enough to do? And we've solved for that. Three, they're worried about pricing. Am I going to land up paying less or the same? Or is this just, you know, lipstick on a different pig? How does this work? Is it going to be another confusing tariffs? Go in, build your own plan, use the 14 days to play with the calculator, to see what the value equation is, to use the data, see how quickly you get through those 5 gigs of free data. and actually understand the equation for yourself. And then lastly, customer service. Like, actually engage with the customer service team. Put them to the test. Ask them stuff. Tell them to port you during your trial. Make them do it. Put them to the test. That really is the point of the trial. And then you'll be in a position to make your own call.
That's awesome. That's really helpful. Next, if listeners are wanting to reach out to you to find out more or either about GrowthInc or about Melon, what's the best place to reach you and how do they find out more information?
I think lots of ways. I think you can find me on LinkedIn and you can DM me there with the greatest of pleasure. You can also get me on email, nicola@melonmobile.co.za or nicola@growthinc.co.za.
Awesome. Nicola, it's been a great pleasure as always. Thanks for your wisdom and for your enthusiasm for the topic. And yeah, I wish you the very best of luck in the weeks and months to come.
Thank you very much, Mike. It's always a pleasure talking to you.
You've been listening to the One-Eyed Man podcast. I'm Mike Stopforth, an entrepreneur, writer, and public speaker, deeply curious about discovering better ways to lead and better ways to live in an increasingly complex world. I find the best source of these ideas is the experience and wisdom of interesting people who are taking unconventional approaches to solving the world's most compelling problems. If you'd like to hear from someone I haven't yet spoken to, visit mikestopforth.com, click on the podcast link, and send through your suggestions. A big thanks to the Solid Gold Podcast Studios in Johannesburg, South Africa, for making this production possible. And remember, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man / person is king.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.